distance, all I could see of her was that her hair was a startling shade of red. They closed ranks before they continued cautiously toward Edward's family, exhibiting the natural respect of a troop of predators as it encounters a larger, unfamiliar group of its own kind. As they approached, I could see how different they were from the Cullens. Their walk was cat-like, a gait that seemed constantly on the edge of shifting into a crouch. They dressed in the ordinary gear of backpackers, jeans and casual button-down shirts and heavy, weatherproof fabrics. The clothes were frayed, though, with wear, and they were barefoot. Both men had cropped hair, but the woman's brilliant orange hair was filled with leaves and debris from the woods. Their sharp eyes carefully took in the more polished, urbane stance of Carlyle, who, flanked by Emmett and Jasper, stepped guardedly forward to meet them. Without any seeming communication between them, they each straightened into a more casual, erect bearing. The man in front was easily the most beautiful, his skin olive-toned beneath the typical pallor, his hair a glossy black. He was of a medium build, hard-muscled, of course, but nothing next to Emmett's brawn. He smiled an easy smile, exposing a flash of gleaming white teeth. The woman was wilder, her eyes shifting restlessly between the men facing her and the loose grouping around me, her chaotic hair quivering in the slight breeze. Her posture was distinctly feline. The second male hovered unobtrusively behind them. Slighter than the leader, his light brown hair and regular features both nondescript. His eyes, though, completely still, somehow seemed the most vigilant. Their eyes were different, too. Not the gold or black I had come to expect, but a deep burgundy color that was disturbing and sinister. The dark-haired man, still smiling, stepped toward Carlyle. "We thought we heard a game," he said in a relaxed voice with the slightest of French accents. "I'm Laurent. These are Victoria and James," he gestured to the vampires beside him. "I'm Carlyle. This is my family. Emmett and Jasper, Rosalie, Esme and Alice, Edward and Bella." He pointed us out in groups, deliberately not calling attention to individuals. I felt a shock when he said my name. "Do you have room for a few more players?" Laurent asked sociably. Carlyle matched Laurent's friendly tone. "Actually, we were just finishing up. But we'd certainly be interested another time. Are you planning to stay in the area for long?" "We're headed north, in fact, but we were curious to see who was in the neighborhood. We haven't run into any company in a long time." "No, this region is usually empty except for us, and the occasional visitor, like yourselves." The tense atmosphere had slowly subsided into a casual conversation. I guessed that Jasper was using his peculiar gift to control the situation. "What's your hunting range?" Laurent casually inquired. Carlyle ignored the assumption behind the inquiry. "The Olympic range here. Up and down the coast ranges on occasion. We keep a permanent residence nearby. There's another permanent settlement like ours up near Denali." Laurent rocked back on his heels slightly. "Permanent? How do you manage that?" There was honest curiosity in his voice. "Why don't you come back to our home with us and we can talk comfortably," Carlyle invited. "It's a rather long story." James and Victoria exchanged a surprised look at the mention of the word home, but Laurent controlled his expression better. "That sounds very interesting, and welcome." His smile was genial. "We've been on the hunt all the way down from Ontario, and we haven't had the chance to clean up in a while." His eyes moved appreciatively over Carlyle's refined appearance. "Please don't take offense, but we'd appreciate it if you'd refrain from hunting in this immediate area. We have to stay inconspicuous, you understand," Carlyle explained. "Of course," Laurent nodded. "We certainly won't encroach on your territory. We just ate outside of Seattle anyway," he laughed. A shiver ran up my spine. "We'll show you the way if you'd like to run with us. Emmett and Alice, you can go with Edward and Bella to get the jeep," he casually added. three things seemed to happen simultaneously while Carlyle was speaking. My hair ruffled with the light breeze, Edward stiffened, and the second male, James, suddenly whipped his head around, scrutinizing me, his nostrils flaring. A swift rigidity fell on all of them as James lurched one step forward into a crouch. Edward bared his teeth, crouching in defense, a feral snarl ripping from his throat. It was nothing like the playful sounds I'd heard from him this morning. It was the single most menacing thing I had ever heard, and chills ran from the crown of my head to the back of my heels. "What's this?" Laurent exclaimed in open surprise. Neither James nor Edward relaxed their aggressive poses. James fainted slightly to the side, and Edward shifted in response. "She's with us." Carlyle's firm rebuff was directed toward James. Laurent seemed to catch my scent less powerfully than James, but awareness now dawned on his face. "You brought a snack?" he asked, his expression incredulous as he took an involuntary step forward. Edward snarled even more ferociously, harshly, his lip curling high above his glistening bared teeth. Laurent stepped back again. "I said she's with us," Carlyle corrected in a hard voice. "But she's human," Laurent protested. The words were not at all aggressive, merely astounded. "Yes." Emmett was very much in evidence at Carlyle's side, his eyes on James. James slowly straightened out of his crouch, but his eyes never left me, his nostrils still wide. Edward stayed tense like a lion in front of me. When Laurent spoke, his tone was soothing, trying to diffuse the sudden hostility. "It appears we have a lot to learn about each other." "Indeed," Carlyle's voice was still cool. "But we'd like to accept your invitation." His eyes flicked toward me and back to Carlyle. "And of course, we will not harm the human girl. We won't hunt in your range, as I said." James glanced in disbelief and aggravation at Laurent, and exchanged another brief look with Victoria, whose eyes still flickered edgily from face to face. Carlyle measured Laurent's open expression for a moment before he spoke. "We'll show you the way. Jasper, Rosalie, Esme," he called. They gathered together, blocking me from view as they converged. Alice was instantly at my side, and Emmett fell back slowly, his eyes locked on James as he backed toward us. "Let's go, Bella." Edward's voice was low and bleak. This whole time I'd been rooted in place, terrified into absolute immobility. Edward had to grip my elbow and pull sharply to break my trance. Alice and Emmett were close behind us, hiding me. I stumbled alongside Edward, still stunned with fear. I couldn't hear if the main group had left yet. Edward's impatience was almost tangible as we moved at human speed to the forest edge. Once we were into the trees, Edward slung me over his back without breaking stride. I gripped as tightly as possible as he took off, the others close on his heels. I kept my head down, but my eyes, wide with fright, wouldn't close. They plunged through the now black forest like wraiths. The sense of exhilaration that usually seemed to possess Edward as he ran was completely absent, replaced by a fury that consumed him and drove him still faster. Even with me on his back, the others trailed behind. We reached the jeep in an impossibly short time, and Edward barely slowed as he flung me in the back seat. "Strap her in," he ordered Emmett, who slid in beside me. Alice was already in the front seat, and Edward was starting the engine. It roared to life, and we swerved backwards, spinning around to face the winding road. Edward was growling something too fast for me to understand, but it sounded a lot like a string of profanities. The jolting trip was much worse this time, and the darkness only made it more frightening. Emmett and Alice both glared out the side windows. We hit the main road, and though our speed increased, I could see much better where we were going. We were headed south, away from Forks. "Where are we going?" I asked. No one answered. No one even looked at me. Damn it, Edward. Where are you taking me? We have to get you away from here. Far away, now. He didn't look back, his eyes on the road. The speedometer read 105 miles an hour. Turn around! You have to take me home, I shouted. I struggled with the stupid harness tearing at the straps. Emmett, Edward said grimly, and Emmett secured my hands in his steely grasp. No, Edward, no, you can't do this. I have to, Bella, now please be quiet. I won't. You have to take me back. Charlie will call the FBI. They'll be all over your family. Carlisle and Esme, they'll have to leave, to hide forever. Calm down, Bella. His voice was cold. We've been there before. Not over me, you don't. You're not ruining everything over me. I struggled violently with total futility. Alice spoke for the first time. Edward, pull over. He flashed her a hard look and then sped up. Edward, let's just talk this through. You don't understand, he roared in frustration. I never heard his voice so loud. It was deafening in the confines of the Jeep. The speedometer neared 115. He's a tracker, Alice. Did you see that? He's a tracker. I felt Emmett stiffen next to me, and I wondered at his reaction to the word. It meant something more to the three of them than it did to me. I wanted to understand, but there was no opening for me to ask. Pull over, Edward. Alice's tone was reasonable, but there was a ring of authority in it I'd never heard before. The speedometer inched past 120. Do it, Edward. Listen to me, Alice. I saw his mind. Tracking is his passion, his obsession, and he wants her, Alice. Her specifically. He begins the hunt tonight. He doesn't know where... He interrupted her. How long do you think it will take him to cross her scent in town? His plan was already set before the words were out of Laurent's mouth. I gasped, knowing where my scent would lead. Charlie! You can't leave him there! You can't leave him! I thrashed against the harness. She's right, Alice said. The car slowed slightly. Let's just look at our options for a minute, Alice coaxed. The car slowed again, more noticeably, and then suddenly we screeched to a stop on the shoulder of the highway. I flew against the harness and then slammed back into the seat. There are no options, Edward hissed. I'm not leaving Charlie, I yelled. He ignored me completely. We have to take her back, Emmett finally spoke. No. Edward was absolute. He's no match for us, Edward. He won't be able to touch her. He'll wait. Emmett smiled. I can wait, too. You didn't see. You don't understand. Once he commits to a hunt, he's unshakable. We'd have to kill him. Emmett didn't seem upset by the idea. That's an option. And the female? She's with him. If it turns into a fight, the leader will go with them too. There are enough of us. There's another option, Alice said quietly. Edward turned on her in fury, his voice a blistering snarl. There is no other option! Emmett and I both stared at him in shock, but Alice seemed unsurprised. The silence lasted for a long minute. As Edward and Alice stared each other down. I broke it. Does anyone want to hear my plan? No, Edward growled. Alice glared at him, finally provoked. Listen, I pleaded. You take me back. No, he interrupted. I glared at him and continued. You take me back. I tell my dad I want to go home to Phoenix. I pack my bags. We wait till this tracker is watching, and then we run. He'll follow us and leave Charlie alone. Charlie won't call the FBI and your family. Then you can take me any damn place you want. They stared at me, stunned. It's not a bad idea, really. Emmett's surprise was definitely an insult. It might work, and we simply can't leave her father unprotected. You know that, Alice said. Everyone looked at Edward. It's too dangerous, I don't want him within 100 miles of her. Emmett was supremely confident. Edward, he's not getting through us. Alice thought for a minute. I don't see him attacking. He'll try to wait for us to leave her alone. It won't take long for him to realize that's not going to happen. I demand that you take me home. I tried to sound firm. Edward pressed his fingers to his temples and squeezed his eyes shut. Please, I said in a much smaller voice. He didn't look up. When he spoke, his voice sounded worn. You're leaving tonight, whether the tracker sees or not. You tell Charlie that you can't stand another minute in Forks. Tell him whatever story works. Pack the first things your hands touch, and then get in your truck. I don't care what he says to you. You have 15 minutes. Do you hear me? 15 minutes from the time you cross the doorstep. The Jeep rumbled to life, and he spun us around, the tires squealing. The needle on the speedometer started to race up the dial. Emmett? I asked, looking pointedly at my hands. Oh, sorry. He let me loose. A few minutes passed in silence, other than the roar of the engine. Then Edward spoke again. This is how it's going to happen. When we get to the house, if the tracker is not there, I will walk her to the door. Then she has 15 minutes. He glared at me in the rearview mirror. Emmett, you take the outside of the house. Alice, you get the truck. I'll be inside as long as she is. After she's out, you two can take the Jeep home and tell Carlisle. No way, Emmett broke in. I'm with you. Think it through, Emmett. I don't know how long I'll be gone. Until we know how far this is going to go, I'm with you. Edward sighed. If the tracker is there, he continued grimly, we keep driving. We're going to make it there before him, Alice said confidently. Edward seemed to accept that. Whatever his problem with Alice was, he didn't doubt her now. What are we going to do with the Jeep? She asked. His voice had a hard edge. You're driving it home. No, I'm not, she said calmly. The unintelligible stream of profanity started again. We can't all fit in my truck, I whispered. Edward didn't appear to hear me. I think you should let me go alone, I said even more quietly. He heard that. Bella, please just do this my way, just this once, he said between clenched teeth. Listen, Charlie's not an imbecile, I protested. If you're not in town tomorrow, he's going to get suspicious. That's irrelevant. We'll make sure he's safe, and that's all that matters. Then what about this tracker? He saw the way you acted tonight. He's going to think you're with me, wherever you are. Emmett looked at me, insultingly surprised again. Edward, listen to her, he urged. I think she's right. Yes, she is, Alice agreed. I can't do that. Edward's voice was icy. Emmett should stay too, I continued. He definitely got an eyeful of Emmett. What? Emmett turned on me. You'll get a better crack at him if you stay, Alice agreed. Edward stared at her incredulously. You think I should let her go alone? Of course not, Alice said. Jasper and I will take her. I can't do that, Edward repeated. But this time there was a trace of defeat in his voice. The logic was working on him. I tried to be persuasive. Hang out here for a week. I saw his expression in the mirror and amended. A few days. Let Charlie see you haven't kidnapped me, and lead this James on a wild goose chase. Make sure he's completely off my trail. Then come and meet me. Take a roundabout route, of course, and then Jasper and Alice can go home. I could see him beginning to consider it. Meet you where? Phoenix. Of course. No. He'll hear that's where you're going, he said impatiently. And you'll make it look like that's a ruse, obviously. He'll know that we'll know that he's listening. He'll never believe I'm actually going where I say I'm going. She's diabolical, Emmett chuckled. And if that doesn't work, there are several million people in Phoenix, I informed him. It's not that hard to find a phone book. I won't go home.
Oh? He inquired, a dangerous note in his voice.
I'm quite old enough to get my own place.
Edward will be with her, Alice reminded him.
What are you going to do in Phoenix? He asked her scathingly.
Stay indoors?
I kind of like it. Emmett was thinking about cornering James, no doubt.
Shut up, Emmett.
Look, if we try to take him down while she's still around, there's a much better chance that someone will get hurt.
She'll get hurt, or you will, trying to protect her.
Now if we get him alone.
He trailed off with a slow smile.
I was right.
The Jeep was crawling slowly along now as we drove into town. Despite my brave talk, I could feel the hairs on my arms standing up. I thought about Charlie, alone in the house, and tried to be courageous.
Bella?
Edward's voice was very soft. Alice and Emmett looked out their windows. If you let anything happen to yourself, anything at all, I'm holding you personally responsible. Do you understand that?
Yes, I gulped.
He turned to Alice.
Can Jasper handle this?
Give him some credit, Edward. He's been doing very, very well, all things considered.
Can you handle this? He asked.
And graceful little Alice pulled back her lips in a horrific grimace and let loose with a guttural snarl that had me cowering against the seat in terror.
Edward smiled at her.
But keep your opinions to yourself. He muttered suddenly.
Chapter 19. Goodbyes. Charlie was waiting up for me. All the house lights were on. My mind was blank as I tried to think of a way to make him let me go. This wasn't going to be pleasant. Edward pulled up slowly, staying well back from my truck. All three of them were acutely alert, ramrods straight in their seats, listening to every sound of the wood, looking through every shadow, catching every scent, searching for something out of place. The engine cut off, and I sat motionless as they continued to listen.
He's not here, Edward said tensely. Let's go.
Emmett reached over to help me get out of the harness.
Don't worry, Bella, he said in a low but cheerful voice. We'll take care of things here quickly.
I felt moisture filling up my eyes as I looked at Emmett. I barely knew him, and yet, somehow, not knowing when I would see him again after tonight was anguishing. I knew this was just a faint taste of the goodbyes I would have to survive in the next hour, and the thought made the tears begin to spill.
Alice. Emmett.
Edward's voice was a command. They slithered soundlessly into the darkness, instantly disappearing. Edward opened my door and took my hand, then drew me into the protecting enclosure of his arm. He walked me swiftly toward the house, eyes always roving through the night.
15 minutes, he warned under his breath.
I can do this, I sniffled. My tears had given me an inspiration. I stopped on the porch and took hold of his face in my hands. I looked fiercely into his eyes.
I love you, I said in a low, intense voice. I will always love you, no matter what happens now.
Nothing is going to happen to you, Bella, he said just as fiercely. Just follow the plan, okay? Keep Charlie safe for me. He's not going to like me very much after this, and I want to have the chance to apologize later.
Get inside, Bella. We have to hurry. His voice was urgent.
One more thing, I whispered passionately. Don't listen to another word I say tonight.
He was leaning in, so all I had to do was stretch up on my toes to kiss his surprised, frozen lips with as much force as I was capable of. Then I turned and kicked the door open.
Go away, Edward! I yelled at him, running inside and slamming the door shut in a still, shocked face.
Bella?
Charlie had been hovering in the living room and he was already on his feet.
Leave me alone!
I screamed at him through my tears, which were flowing relentlessly now. I
I ran up the stairs to my room, throwing the door shut and locking it. I ran to my bed, flinging myself on the floor to retrieve my duffel bag. I reached swiftly between the mattress and box spring to grab the knotted old sock that contained my secret cash hoard. Charlie was pounding on my door.
Bella, are you okay? What's going on?
His voice was frightened.
I'm going home,
I shouted, my voice breaking in the perfect spot.
Did he hurt you?
His tone edged toward anger.
No,
I shrieked a few octaves higher. I turned to my dresser, and Edward was already there, silently yanking out armfuls of random clothes which he proceeded to throw to me.
Did he break up with you?
Charlie was perplexed.
No,
I yelled, slightly more breathless as I shoved everything into the bag. Edward threw another drawer's contents at me. The bag was pretty much full now.
What happened, Bella?
Charlie shouted through the door, pounding again.
I broke up with him,
I shouted back, jerking on the zipper of my bag. Edward's capable hands pushed mine away and zipped it smoothly. He put the strap carefully over my arm.
I'll be in the truck. Go,
he whispered, and pushed me toward the door. He vanished out the window. I unlocked the door and pushed past Charlie roughly, struggling with my heavy bag as I ran down the stairs.
What happened?
He yelled. He was right behind me.
I thought you liked him.
He caught my elbow in the kitchen. Though he was still bewildered, his grip was firm. He spun me around to look at him, and I could see in his face that he had no intention of letting me leave. I could think of only one way to escape, and it involved hurting him so much that I hated myself for even considering it. But I had no time, and I had to keep him safe. I glared up at my father, fresh tears in my eyes for what I was about to do.
I do like him. That's the problem. I can't do this anymore. I can't put down any more roots here. I don't want to end up trapped in this stupid, boring town like Mom. I'm not going to make the same dumb mistake she did. I hate it. I can't stay here another minute.
His hand dropped from my arm like I'd electrocuted him. I turned away from his shocked, wounded face and headed for the door.
Bells, you can't leave now. It's nighttime,
he whispered behind me. I didn't turn around. I'll sleep in the truck if I get tired.
Just wait another week, he pled, still shell-shocked.
Renee will be back by then.
This completely derailed me. What?
Charlie continued eagerly, almost babbling with relief as I hesitated.
She called while you were out. Things aren't going so well in Florida, and if Phil doesn't get signed by the end of the week, they're going back to Arizona. The assistant coach of the Sidewinders said they might have a spot for another shortstop.
I shook my head, trying to reassemble my now confused thoughts. Every passing second put Charlie in more danger.
I have a key, I muttered, turning the knob.
He was too close. One hand extended toward me, his face dazed. I couldn't lose any more time arguing with him. I was going to have to hurt him further.
Just let me go, Charlie.
I repeated my mother's last words as she'd walked out this same door so many years ago. I said them as angrily as I could manage, and I threw the door open.
It didn't work out, okay? I really, really hate forks.
My cruel words did their job. Charlie stayed frozen on the doorstep, stunned while I ran into the night. I was hideously frightened of the empty yard. I ran wildly for the truck, visualizing a dark shadow behind me. I threw my bag in the bed and wrenched the door open. The key was waiting in the ignition.
I'll call you tomorrow,
I yelled, wishing more than anything that I could explain everything to him right then, knowing I would never be able to. I gunned the engine and peeled out. Edward reached for my hand. Pull over, he said as the house and Charlie disappeared behind us.
I can drive, I said through the tears pouring down my cheeks.
His long hands unexpectedly gripped my waist, and his foot pushed mine off the gas pedal. He pulled me across his lap, wrenching my hands free of the wheel, and suddenly he was in the driver's seat. The truck didn't swerve an inch.
You wouldn't be able to find the house, he explained.
Lights flared suddenly behind us, I stared out the back window, eyes wide with horror. "It's just Alice," he reassured me. He took my hand again. My mind filled with the image of Charlie in the doorway. "The tracker?" "He heard the end of your performance," Edward said grimly. "Charlie?" I asked in dread. "The tracker followed us. He's running behind us now." My body went cold. "Can we outrun him?" "No," but he sped up as he spoke. The truck's engine whined in protest. My plan suddenly didn't feel so brilliant anymore. I was staring back at Alice's headlights when the truck shuddered, and a dark shadow sprung up outside the window. My blood-curdling scream lasted a fraction of a second before Edward's hand clamped down on my mouth. "It's Emmett." He released my mouth and wound his arm around my waist. "It's okay, Bella," he promised. "You're going to be safe." We raced through the quiet town toward the North Highway. "I didn't realize you were still so bored with small-town life," he said conversationally, and I knew he was trying to distract me. "It seemed like you were adjusting fairly well, especially recently. Maybe I was just flattering myself that I was making life more interesting for you." "I wasn't being nice," I confessed, ignoring his attempt at diversion, looking down at my knees. That was the same thing my mom said when she left him. You could say I was hitting below the belt. "Don't worry. He'll forgive you." He smiled a little, though it didn't touch his eyes. I stared at him desperately, and he saw the naked panic in my eyes. "Bella, it's going to be all right." "But it won't be all right when I'm not with you," I whispered. "We'll be together again in a few days," he said, tightening his arm around me. "Don't forget. Don't forget that this was your idea." "It was the best idea. Of course it was mine." His answering smile was bleak and disappeared immediately. "Why did this happen?" I asked, my voice catching. "Why me?" He stared blackly at the road ahead. "It's my fault. I was a fool to expose you like that." The rage in his voice was directed internally. "That's not what I meant," I insisted. "I was there, big deal. It didn't bother the other two. Why did this James decide to kill me? There are people all over the place. Why me?" He hesitated, thinking before he answered. "I got a good look at his mind tonight," he began in a low voice. "I'm not sure if there's anything I could have done to avoid this once he saw you. It is partially your fault." His voice was wry. "If you didn't smell so appallingly luscious, he might not have bothered. But when I had defended you, well, that made it a lot worse. He's not used to being thwarted, no matter how insignificant the object. He thinks of himself as a hunter and nothing else. His existence is consumed with tracking, and a challenge is all he asks of life. Suddenly we've presented him with a beautiful challenge. A large clan of strong fighters, all bent on protecting the one vulnerable element. You wouldn't believe how euphoric he is now. It's his favorite game, and we've just made it his most exciting game ever." His tone was full of disgust. He paused a moment. "But if I had stood by, he would have killed you right then," he said with hopeless frustration. "I thought... I didn't smell the same to the others as I do to you," I said hesitantly. "You don't. But that doesn't mean that you aren't still a temptation to every one of them. If you had appealed to the tracker, or any of them, the same way you appealed to me, it would have meant a fight right there." I shuddered. "I don't think I have any choice but to kill him now," he muttered. "Carlisle won't like it." I could hear the tires cross the bridge, though I couldn't see the river in the dark. I knew we were getting close. I had to ask him now. "How can you kill a vampire?" He glanced at me with unreadable eyes, and his voice was suddenly harsh. "The only way to be sure is to tear him to shreds and then burn the pieces." "And the other two will fight with him?" "The woman will. I'm not sure about Laurent. They don't have a very strong bond. He's only with them for convenience.
He was embarrassed by James in the meadow. But James and the woman, they'll try to kill you?
I asked, my voice raw.
Bella, don't you dare waste time worrying about me. Your only concern is keeping yourself safe. And please, please, trying not to be reckless.
Is he still following?
Yes. He won't attack the house, though. Not tonight.
He turned off onto the invisible drive, with Alice following behind.
We drove right up to the house. The lights inside were bright, but they did little to alleviate the blackness of the encroaching forest. Emmett had my door open before the truck was stopped. He pulled me out of the seat, tucked me like a football into his vast chest, and ran me through the door. We burst into the large white room, Edward and Alice at our sides. All of them were there. They were already on their feet at the sound of our approach. Laurent stood in their midst. I could hear low growls rumble deep in Emmett's throat as he set me down next to Edward.
He's tracking us, Edward announced, glaring balefully at Laurent.
Laurent's face was unhappy. I was afraid of that. Alice danced to Jasper's side and whispered in his ear. Her lips quivered with the speed of her silent speech. They flew up the stairs together. Rosalie watched them and then moved quickly to Emmett's side. Her beautiful eyes were intense and, when they flickered unwillingly to my face, furious.
What will he do? Carlyle asked Laurent in chilling tones.
I'm sorry, he answered. I was afraid when your boy there defended her that it would set him off.
Can you stop him?
Laurent shook his head.
Nothing stops James when he gets started.
We'll stop him, Emmett promised. There was no doubt what he meant.
You can't bring him down. I've never seen anything like him in my 300 years. He's absolutely lethal. That's why I joined his coven.
His coven, I thought. Of course.
The show of leadership in the clearing was merely that. A show.
Laurent was shaking his head. He glanced at me, perplexed, and back to Carlyle.
Are you sure it's worth it?
Edward's enraged roar filled the room. Laurent cringed back. Carlyle looked gravely at Laurent.
I'm afraid you're going to have to make a choice.
Laurent understood. He deliberated for a moment. His eyes took in every face and finally swept the bright room.
I'm intrigued by the life you've created here, but I won't get in the middle of this. I bear none of you any enmity, but I won't go up against James. I think I will head north to that clan in Denali.
He hesitated.
Don't underestimate James. He's got a brilliant mind and unparalleled senses. He's every bit as comfortable in the human world as you seem to be. And he won't come at you head on.
I'm sorry for what's been unleashed here. Truly sorry.
He bowed his head, but I saw him flicker another puzzled look at me.
Go in peace, was Carlyle's formal answer.
Laurent took another long look around himself, and then he hurried out the door.
The silence lasted less than a second.
How close? Carlyle looked to Edward. Esme was already moving. Her hand touched an inconspicuous keypad on the wall, and with a groan, huge metal shutters began sealing up the glass wall. I gaped.
About 3 miles out past the river. He's circling around to meet up with the female.
What's the plan?
We'll lead him off, and then Jasper and Alice will run her south.
And then?
Edward's tone was deadly.
As soon as Bella is clear, we hunt him.
I guess there's no other choice, Carlyle agreed, his face grim.
Edward turned to Rosalie.
Get her upstairs and trade clothes, Edward commanded. She stared back at him with livid disbelief.
Why should I?
She hissed.
What is she to me?
Except a menace. A danger you've chosen to inflict on all of us.
I flinched back from the venom in her voice.
Rose, Emmett murmured, putting one hand on her shoulder. She shook it off. But I was watching Edward carefully, knowing his temper, worried about his reaction. He surprised me.
He looked away from Rosalie as if she hadn't spoken, as if she didn't exist.
"Esme," he asked calmly.
"Of course," Esme murmured. Esme was at my side in half a heartbeat, swinging me up easily into her arms and dashing up the stairs before I could gasp in shock.
"What are we doing?" I asked breathlessly as she set me down in a dark room somewhere off the second-story hall.
"Trying to confuse the smell. It won't work for long, but it might help get you out." I could hear her clothes falling to the floor.
"I don't think I'll fit," I hesitated, but her hands were abruptly pulling my shirt over my head. I quickly stripped my jeans off myself.
She handed me something. It felt like a shirt. I struggled to get my arms through the right holes. As soon as I was done, she handed me her slacks. I yanked them on, but I couldn't get my feet out. They were too long. She deftly rolled the hems a few times so I could stand. Somehow she was already in my clothes. She pulled me back to the stairs where Alice stood, small leather bag in one hand. They each grabbed one of my elbows and half-carried me as they flew down the stairs. It appeared that everything had been settled downstairs in our absence. Edward and Emmett were ready to leave, Emmett carrying a heavy-looking backpack over his shoulder. Carlyle was handing something small to Esme. He turned and handed Alice the same thing. It was a tiny silver cell phone. "Esme and Rosalie will be taking your truck, Bella," he told me as he passed. I nodded, glancing warily at Rosalie. She was glowering at Carlyle with a resentful expression. "Alice, Jasper, take the Mercedes. You'll need the dark tint in the south." They nodded as well. "We're taking the Jeep." I was surprised to see that Carlyle intended to go with Edward. I realized suddenly, with a stab of fear, that they made up the hunting party.
"Alice," Carlyle asked, "will they take the bait?" Everyone watched Alice as she closed her eyes and became incredibly still. Finally, her eyes opened.
"He'll track you. The woman will follow the truck.
We should be able to leave after that." Her voice was certain.
"Let's go," Carlyle began to walk toward the kitchen. But Edward was at my side at once. He caught me up in his iron grip, crushing me to him. He seemed unaware of his watching family as he pulled my face to his, lifting my feet off the floor. For the shortest second, his lips were icy and hard against mine. Then it was over. He set me down, still holding my face, his glorious eyes burning into mine. His eyes went blank, curiously dead as he turned away. And they were gone. We stood there, the others looking away from me as the tears streaked noiselessly down my face. The silent moment dragged on, and then Esme's phone vibrated in her hand. It flashed to her ear.
"Now," she said.
Rosalie stalked out the front door without another glance in my direction, but Esme touched my cheek as she passed.
"Be safe,"
her whisper lingered behind them as they slipped out the door. I heard my truck start thunderously and then fade away. Jasper and Alice waited. Alice's phone seemed to be at her ear before it buzzed.
"Edward says the woman is on Esme's trail. I'll get the car."
She vanished into the shadows the way Edward had gone. Jasper and I looked at each other. He stood across the length of the entryway from me, being careful.
"You're wrong, you know," he said quietly.
"What?" I gasped.
"I can feel what you're feeling now, and you are worth it."
"I'm not," I mumbled. "If anything happens to them, it will be for nothing."
"You're wrong," he repeated, smiling kindly at me.
I heard nothing, but then Alice stepped through the front door and came toward me with her arms held out.
"May I?" she asked.
"You're the first one to ask permission," I smiled wryly. She lifted me in her slender arms as easily as Emmett had, shielding me protectively. And then we flew out the door, leaving the lights bright behind us.
Chapter 20, Impatience.
When I woke up, I was confused. My thoughts were hazy, still twisted up in dreams and nightmares. It took me longer than it should have to realize where I was. This room was too bland to belong anywhere but in a hotel. The bedside lamps bolted to the tables were a dead giveaway, as were the long drapes made from the same fabric as the bedspread, and the generic watercolor prints on the walls. I tried to remember how I got here, but nothing came at first. I did remember the sleek black car, the glass in the windows darker than that on a limousine. The engine was almost silent, though we'd raced across the black freeways at more than twice the legal speed. And I remembered Alice sitting with me on the dark leather back seat. Somehow, during the long night, my head had ended up against her granite neck. My closeness didn't seem to bother her at all, and her cool, hard skin was oddly comforting to me. The front of her thin cotton shirt was cold, damp with the tears that streamed from my eyes until red and sore they ran dry. Sleep had evaded me. My aching eyes strained open, even though the night finally ended, and dawn broke over a low peak somewhere in California. The gray light, streaking across the cloudless sky, stung my eyes. But I couldn't close them. When I did, the images that flashed all too vividly, like still slides behind my lids, were unbearable. Charlie's broken expression, Edward's brutal snarl, teeth bared, Rosalie's resentful glare, the keen-eyed scrutiny of the tracker, the dead look in Edward's eyes after he kissed me the last time. I couldn't stand to see them, so I fought against my weariness and the sun rose higher. I was still awake when we came through a shallow mountain pass, and the sun, behind us now, reflected off the tiled rooftops of the Valley of the Sun. I didn't have enough emotion left to be surprised that we'd made a 3-day journey in one. I stared blankly at the wide, flat expanse laid out in front of me. Phoenix, the palm trees, the scrubby creosote, the haphazard lines of the intersecting freeways, the green swaths of golf courses and turquoise splotches of swimming pools, all submerged in a thin smog and embraced by the short, rocky ridges that weren't really big enough to be called mountains. The shadows of the palm trees slanted across the freeway, defined, sharper than I remembered, paler than they should be. Nothing could hide in these shadows. The bright open freeway seemed benign enough, but I felt no relief, no sense of homecoming. "Which way to the airport, Bella?" Jasper had asked, and I flinched, though his voice was quite soft and unalarming. It was the first sound, besides the purr of the car, to break the long night silence. "Stay on the I-10, I'd answered automatically. "We'll pass right by it." My brain had worked slowly through the fog of sleep deprivation. "Are we flying somewhere?" I'd asked Alice. "No, but it's better to be close, just in case." I remembered beginning the loop around Sky Harbor International, but not ending it. I suppose that must have been when I'd fallen asleep. Though now that I'd chased the memories down, I did have a vague impression of leaving the car. The sun was just falling behind the horizon, my arm draped over Alice's shoulder, and her arm firm around my waist, dragging me along as I stumbled through the warm, dry shadows. I had no memory of this room. I looked at the digital clock on the nightstand. The red numbers claimed it was 3 o'clock, but they gave no indication if it was night or day. No edge of light escaped the thick curtains, but the room was bright with the light from the lamps. I rose stiffly and staggered to the window, pulling back the drapes. It was dark outside, 3 in the morning then. My room looked out on a deserted section of the freeway and the new long-term parking garage for the airport. It was slightly comforting to be able to pinpoint time and place. I looked down at myself. I was still wearing Esme's clothes, and they didn't fit very well at all. I looked around the room, glad when I discovered my duffel bag on top of the low dresser. I was on my way to find new clothes when a light tap on the door made me jump. "Can I come in?" Alice asked. I took a deep breath. "Sure." She walked in and looked me over cautiously. "You look like you could sleep longer," she said. I just shook my head. She drifted silently to the curtains and closed them securely before turning back to me.
"We'll need to stay inside," she told me.
"Okay." My voice was hoarse. It cracked.
"Thirsty?" she asked.
I shrugged.
"I'm okay. How about you?"
"Nothing unmanageable," she smiled.
"I ordered some food for you. It's in the front room. Edward reminded me that you have to eat a lot more frequently than we do."
I was instantly more alert.
"He called?"
"No," she said, and watched as my face fell. "It was before we left."
She took my hand carefully and led me through the door into the living room of the hotel suite. I could hear a low buzz of voices coming from the TV.
Jasper sat motionlessly at the desk in the corner, his eyes watching the news with no glimmer of interest. I sat on the floor next to the coffee table, where a tray of food waited, and began picking at it without noticing what I was eating. Alice perched on the arm of the sofa and stared blankly at the TV like Jasper.
I ate slowly, watching her, turning now and then to glance quickly at Jasper. It began to dawn on me that they were too still. They never looked away from the screen, though commercials were playing now. I pushed the tray away, my stomach abruptly uneasy.
Alice looked down at me.
"What's wrong, Alice?" I asked.
"Nothing's wrong." Her eyes were wide, honest, and I didn't trust them.
"What do we do now?"
"We wait for Carlisle to call."
"And should he have called by now?"
I could see that I was near the mark. Alice's eyes flitted from mine to the phone on top of her leather bag and back.
"What does that mean?"
My voice quavered and I fought to control it.
"That he hasn't called yet."
"It just means that they don't have anything to tell us."
But her voice was too even, and the air was harder to breathe.
Jasper was suddenly beside Alice, closer to me than usual.
"Bella," he said in a suspiciously soothing voice, "you have nothing to worry about. You are completely safe here."
"I know that."
"Then why are you frightened?"
he asked, confused. He might feel the tenor of my emotions, but he couldn't read the reasons behind them.
"You heard what Laurent said." My voice was just a whisper, but I was sure they could hear me. "He said James was lethal. What if something goes wrong and they get separated? If something happens to any of them, Carlisle, Emmett, Edward," I gulped. "If that wild female hurts Esme,"
my voice had grown higher, a note of hysteria beginning to rise in it,
"how could I live with myself when it's my fault? None of you should be risking yourselves for me."
"Bella, Bella, stop," he interrupted me, his words pouring out so quickly they were hard to understand.
"You're worrying about all the wrong things, Bella. Trust me on this. None of us are in jeopardy. You are under too much strain as it is. Don't add to it with wholly unnecessary worries. Listen to me," he ordered, for I had looked away. "Our family is strong. Our only fear is losing you."
"But why should you—" Alice interrupted this time, touching my cheek with her cold fingers.
"It's been almost a century that Edward's been alone. Now he's found you. You can't see the changes that we see, we who have been with him for so long. Do you think any of us want to look into his eyes for the next 100 years if he loses you?"
My guilt slowly subsided as I looked into her dark eyes. But even as the calm spread over me, I knew I couldn't trust my feelings with Jasper there. It was a very long day. We stayed in the room. Alice called down to the front desk and asked them to ignore our maid service for now. The window stayed shut, the TV on, though no one watched it. At regular intervals, food was delivered for me. A silver phone resting on Alice's bag seemed to grow bigger as the hours passed. My babysitters handled the suspense better than I did. As I fidgeted and paced, they simply grew more still. Two statues, whose eyes followed me imperceptibly as I moved. I occupied myself with memorizing the room, the stripe pattern of the couches, tan, peach, cream, dull gold, and tan again. Sometimes I stared at the abstract prints, randomly finding pictures in the shapes, like I'd found pictures in the clouds as a child. I traced a blue hand, a woman combing her hair, a cat stretching. But when the pale red circle became a staring eye, I looked away. As the afternoon wore on, I went back to bed, simply for something to do. I hoped that by myself in the dark, I could give in to the terrible fears that hovered on the edge of my consciousness, unable to break through under Jasper's careful supervision. But Alice followed me casually, as if by some coincidence she had grown tired of the front room at the same time. I was beginning to wonder exactly what sort of instructions Edward had given her. I lay across the bed, and she sat, legs folded, next to me. I ignored her at first, suddenly tired enough to sleep. But after a few minutes, the panic that had held off in Jasper's presence began to make itself known. I gave up on the idea of sleep quickly then, curling up into a small ball, wrapping my arms around my legs. "Alice?" I asked. "Yes?" I kept my voice very calm. "What do you think they're doing?" "Carlyle wanted to lead the tracker as far north as possible. Wait for him to get close, and then turn and ambush him. Esme and Rosalie were supposed to head west as long as they could keep the female behind them. If she turned around, they were to head back to Forks and keep an eye on your dad. So I imagine things are going well if they can't call. It means the tracker is close enough that they don't want him to overhear. And Esme? I think she must be back in Forks. She won't call if there's any chance the female will overhear. I expect they're all just being very careful. Do you think they're safe, really?" "Bella, how many times do we have to tell you that there's no danger to us?"
"Would you tell me the truth, though?"
"Yes, I will always tell you the truth." Her voice was earnest. I deliberated for a moment and decided she meant it. "Tell me, then, how do you become a vampire?" My question caught her off guard. She was quiet. I rolled over to look at her, and her expression seemed ambivalent. "Edward doesn't want me to tell you that," she said firmly, but I sensed she didn't agree. "That's not fair. I think I have a right to know."
"I know."
I looked at her, waiting. She sighed. "He'll be extremely angry."
"It's none of his business. This is between you and me."
"Alice, as a friend, I'm begging you." And we were friends now, somehow. She must have known we would be all along. She looked at me with her splendid, wise eyes, choosing.
"I'll tell you the mechanics of it," she said finally. "But I don't remember it myself, and I've never done it or seen it done. So keep in mind that I can only tell you the theory."
I waited.
"As predators, we have a glut of weapons in our physical arsenal. Much, much more than really necessary. The strength, the speed, the acute senses, not to mention those of us like Edward, Jasper, and I who have extra senses as well. And then, like a carnivorous flower, we are physically attractive to our prey." I was very still, remembering how pointedly Edward had demonstrated the same concept for me in the meadow. She smiled a wide, ominous smile. "We have another fairly superfluous weapon. We are also venomous," she said, her teeth glistening.
"The venom doesn't kill. It's merely incapacitating. It works slowly, spreading through the bloodstream, so that once bitten, our prey is in too much physical pain to escape us. Mostly superfluous, as I said. If we're that close, the prey doesn't escape. Of course, there are always exceptions. Carlyle, for example."
"So, if the venom is left to spread," I murmured.
"It takes a few days for the transformation to be complete, depending on how much venom is in the bloodstream, how close the venom enters to the heart. As long as the heart keeps beating, the poison spreads, healing, changing the body as it moves through it. Eventually the heart stops, and the conversion is finished. But all that time, every minute of it, a victim would be wishing for death." I shivered.
"It's not pleasant, you see."
"Edward said that it was very hard to do."
"I don't quite understand," I said.
"We're also like sharks in a way. Once we taste the blood, or even smell it for that matter, it becomes very hard to keep from feeding. Sometimes impossible. So you see, to actually bite someone, to taste the blood, it would begin the frenzy. It's difficult on both sides. The bloodlust on the one hand, the awful pain on the other. Why do you think you don't remember?
I don't know. For everyone else, the pain of transformation is the sharpest memory they have of their human life.
I remember nothing of being human.
Her voice was wistful. We lay silently, wrapped in our individual meditations. The seconds ticked by, and I had almost forgotten her presence. I was so enveloped in my thoughts. Then, without any warning, Alice leapt from the bed, landing lightly on her feet. My head jerked up as I stared at her, startled.
Something's changed.
Her voice was urgent, and she wasn't talking to me anymore.
She reached the door at the same time Jasper did. He had obviously heard our conversation and her sudden exclamation.
He put his hands on her shoulders and guided her back to the bed, sitting her on the edge.
What do you see? He asked intently, staring into her eyes.
Her eyes were focused on something very far away.
I sat close to her, leaning in to catch her low, quick voice. I see a room. It's long, and there are mirrors everywhere. The floor is wooden. He's in the room, and he's waiting. There's gold, a gold stripe across the mirrors.
Where is the room?
I don't know. Something is missing. Another decision hasn't been made yet.
How much time?
It's soon. He'll be in the mirror room today, or maybe tomorrow. It all depends. He's waiting for something, and he's in the dark now.
Jasper's voice was calm, methodical, as he questioned her in a practiced way.
What is he doing?
He's watching TV?
No, he's running a VCR in the dark, in another place.
Can you see where he is?
No, it's too dark.
And the mirror room, what else is there?
Just the mirrors and the gold.
It's a band around the room.
And there's a black table with a big stereo and a TV.
He's touching the VCR there, but he doesn't watch the way he does in the dark room.
This is the room where he waits.
Her eyes drifted, then focused on Jasper's face.
There's nothing else?
She shook her head. They looked at each other motionless.
What does it mean? I asked.
Neither of them answered for a moment, then Jasper looked at me.
It means the tracker's plans have changed.
He's made a decision that will lead him to the mirror room and the dark room.
But we don't know where those rooms are?
No.
But we do know that he won't be in the mountains north of Washington being hunted.
He'll elude them. Alice's voice was bleak.
Should we call?
I asked. They traded a serious look, undecided.
And the phone rang.
Alice was across the room before I could lift my head to look at it. She pushed a button and held the phone to her ear, but she didn't speak first.
Carlisle, she breathed.
She didn't seem surprised or relieved the way I felt.
Yes, she said, glancing at me.
She listened for a long moment.
I just saw him.
She described again the vision she'd seen.
Whatever made him get on that plane, it was leading him to those rooms.
She paused.
Yes, Alice said into the phone,
and then she spoke to me.
Bella?
She held the phone out toward me. I ran to it.
Hello? I breathed. Bella,
Edward said.
Oh, Edward, I was so worried.
Bella,
he sighed in frustration. I told you not to worry about anything but yourself.
It was so unbelievably good to hear his voice. I felt the hovering cloud of despair lighten and drift back as he spoke.
Where are you?
We're outside of Vancouver,